Hello and welcome to Tit Radio. I'm Monster B, and sitting at the round table with me tonight is Peter 64.
G'day.
Jay Lindsay.
Hello.
Claw 2.
Hello, everyone.
330.
Hello.
Zoke.
Hello.
And Azmuth.
Good evening.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Pretty good. This is a very nice round table that you have.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What wood is it?
Yeah.
Oh, and this is episode 6. Did I say that?
No, you didn't.
Okay. It's episode 6.
You throw the table out each time because this table is holding up really nicely.
Try not to lean back in that chair, 330. That one leg is broken. All right. Let's check our feedback. And we did get some feedback.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Wait, your tapes.
Oh, I remember that. That's, yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the one that was actually posted in HPR, that comment.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is actually. Yeah, everyone go to episode 5 and just follow the instructions.
At the top.
Yeah.
Both of you. Both listeners.
Yes, both of you guys do that.
Yeah. Well, there's some more.
Actually, one of them already did, yeah. Me.
That's a funny one. Yeah, you have to see it. Can't really explain this one. So what else did we get, Peter?
Yeah, we got quite a few. I can't remember. Baza sent us one, Baza Will. I can't remember if we talked about the open videos on Daily Motion and that. Was that on Linux Cranks or Tit? Doesn't matter anyway. I just remember one show we were trying to find all the open videos on Daily Motion, and then Baza emailed us and told us what a bunch of drongos we were. And if you go to openvideo.dailymotion.com is where you're going to find them all.
And even the YouTube
also,
test site.
Yeah, that's right. He also sent us. What have you got that there, Clark, too?
Oh, that was youtube.com/HTML5, I believe.
Yeah.
And I believe that didn't work for me or something. I mean, it worked, but I couldn't watch any of the videos, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong.
Well, definitely the Daily Motion one worked. I've been there.
Yeah, the Daily Motion one worked. That was pretty neat.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. I can't remember what episode that was, but that's if you're looking for the open videos using Fiora and OgForbis or whatever it all is, then go there. Now, okay, we actually had a couple from BSD users, which is really good. Now, I'm going to read these. The first one's not so long, and the last one is really long. But anyway, we'll read the first one, and then we might have a discussion, and we'll talk about the next one. Okay, first of all, I've attached a picture of the 2004 OpenBSD Hackathon. In this picture, you'll find that pretty much all the developers going to this event have laptops. Using OpenBSD on a laptop myself, I can attest to the fact that BSD culture is not desktop computer-centric, as mentioned in this episode. The reason why I myself run OpenBSD most of the time is simply because of the speed of the installation and configuration. I also very much like the ports tree because you don't need to reconstruct the build system for almost anything on there. This makes it possible to just start hacking at the source of almost any program on your computer with very little effort, and that's fun. More generally, however, I find that most Unixes are so similar in nature and run mostly all the same programs that it doesn't really matter what you run. Like, for instance, I've always told people I run Linux when I actually run BSD. The reason for this is most people know what I'm talking about when I say Linux, and the difference between the two are so negligible that most of the time they don't need to know exactly what I run. Take care and keep up the good show, mates. And that was from Pants Butt.
Sigflup.
Oh, no, Pants. Yeah, I know this guy.
No, it's a girl. It's a lady.
Oh, I know this lady. Sorry.
Well, it actually says from Pants Butt. At the top of it, yeah, and down the bottom, it's signed Sigflup. But,
this person does Sega Genesis emulation work. It's really cool stuff. I'm going to interview him or her.
It's a her. She just did a HPR episode Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. That's
about
the same
demos?
Person. Demo or bust, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, just a couple of things out of that. One was, yeah, that picture. One thing I did learn is bloody BSD blokes are bloody messy because there's wires going everywhere. But definitely, yeah, I think I mentioned in that episode that not hanging around in that BSD community, I wasn't sure whether people ran it on laptops. But I did check out the forums. It's pretty obvious, yeah, it does. Heaps of people run on laptops.
I mean, so much of computing these days just seems to be laptop, you know? I mean, so many people have a laptop. I would have been surprised to hear that BSD people didn't use laptops. That just would not seem right.
Like I said, I didn't know really anything about it. Anyway. Okay, now, the next one, this is pretty long.
Read every other word.
Nah.
We'll get the idea.
I think it's worth listening to it all. Righto. Hi, guys. So, Super Cow Power, then let me say, moo. I really enjoyed your segment on BSD and wanted to mention a few thoughts. Colonel Holy Wars. People can get emotional about this sort of stuff, but a Google searching for BSD Linux comparisons usually gets you the latest statements. Statements that one or the other are so many years behind the other are not worthy of serious attention. The last I heard, currently the BSDs are ahead in areas of SMP and resolving multiple domains to one IP in web serving. I also listened to Distrocast and they said, I think in their latest, that the only serious distribution for dedicated web servers are Debian, RHEL, CentOS, FreeBSD and OpenBSD. I can kind of see why. A web server is like a sitting duck on the web. I kind of take it that these guys are authorities. Otherwise, licensing is always an issue. BSD has seen a recently new surge as many microcontroller-based devices went multi-core. And since they favour the BSD license, there has been a surge in embedded device getting kernel upgrades. Of course, the last two items are not really appropriate to discussion of desktop use. For a switch, the user needs a killer feature to lure him away from whatever he's doing now. For instance, I began getting the bad case of file system MB over BSD ZSF, which features snapshotting. I wanted that feature, but fortunately I found a Linux alternative in NIL FS2, so I did not have to move. The only other reason I keep an interest in BSD is that I think like this. I use Linux, a Unix work-alike. Why aren't I using Unix then? So I always look at the other guy's lawn on this one. And hey, you know what? The grass isn't always greener over there. Someone talked about compatibility layers and said you did not know what how they work. Now, it's basically a translation of table and memory mapping Linux systems calls to the corresponding Unix system calls. That's gobbledygook to me. Yeah, well, I tell you, it's gobbledygook bloody gook to me too. But I have a little experience running a 32-bit application on AMD 64 Debian, which is a 30-bit compatibility layer. In this case, the program wanted was Composer, a non-KDE website authoring program, and it was only available as a source in a 32-bit deb file. I couldn't compile it, so I set it up in a 32-bit partition, then I copied the binary into the user bin on my 64-bit and kicked it over, and it worked fine. Actually, that and an accelerated kernel module for Fabrice Belliards, and that's the guy who gave us FFmpeg, Qemu Virtual Machine Software, convinced me that, for me, running my 64-bit system as a 32-bit system was the right thing, and that, again, is for me. Lastly, the next release of Debian Squares will feature a kernel choice between Linux and free BSD kernels. That's going to be historic, a distro that lets you choose. Thanks for reading. I love your show. Keep it up. I know I write long-winded, so it's cool if you need to chop things up a bit if you go over this in your show. And that was from Deep Geek.
I knew it.
Yeah, you were right. And just a matter of interest, Deep Geek does the Talk Geek to Me podcast.
Phenomenal podcast.
Yeah, I actually listened to the one on nuclear power stations this morning while I was at the golf course. So, yeah, thanks for that. A couple of interesting things I thought out of that is the one that Debian's going to give you a choice between the BSD kernel and the Linux kernel.
Yeah, I think it's already, is it already in, I guess because I'm running squeeze/sid, because I remember seeing something about that somewhere when I was doing some kind of upgrade. it was like some kind of in-cursive menu, I think, and it was asking me about that. I kind of glossed over it, but I think I saw something about that.
Yeah.
Or I could have imagined it just as easily.
I don't know. Jay Lindsay, you'd know more about that sort of stuff. Maybe you don't.
He's asleep, or he's angry at you.
He might be. Or he's dropped off again, as usual. Anyway, yeah, so thanks for that one. And
the file thing sounds pretty cool, too. I don't know how he got support for that file system in his current distro. That's what I'm interested in finding out.
Is that NilFS2?
NilFS2, yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
I didn't see that in when I was installing Debian. I didn't see that as, you know, a choice or anything. So I don't know where he's getting that, but it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. It's not only Linux listeners. We have... Well, maybe this is the two listeners the other bloke was talking about. He meant two BSD listeners.
Two BSD listeners.
Yeah. Or maybe he just doesn't know what he's talking about.
Probably that, too.
Yeah. Well, after all, he does follow most of us on Twitter, so that sort of says how intelligent the bloke is, I reckon, to follow me on Twitter. Yeah, but anyway. Is it just me and you, Clark, too, or what?
I think so.
No, I'm still here, but I've used BSD, so I didn't really want to comment on any of this stuff.
Yeah, well, I'd
like to at least vaguely know what I'm talking about.
You know, not that this has anything to do with BSD per se, but I did buy the BSD magazine that I think Monster B and I were talking about the other week, and you know, I was looking at the free BSD install article, and the person who wrote the article, you know, obviously when you're doing these kinds of articles, you install it in a virtual machine, right, so that you can take screenshots and stuff of the installation. But the virtual machine, you know, he took screenshots and he included like the window border on the virtual machine, and it was very obviously an OS X box that he was installing the thing on. And I mean, it just kind of got to me because, and again, this is, I guess, but you can't even use your own OS, and I know OS X is based on free BSD, blah, 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 but that's not the same. But, you know, I mean, he couldn't even use free BSD, really, to write an article about free BSD. It was just, it annoyed me greatly.
Well, yeah, I must admit, I think the last episode I said I didn't think I'd bother installing BSD, but I've actually decided in the last couple of weeks that I'm going to give it a go.
You know, I keep wanting to try it, and I for whatever reason, the computer well,
let's
I try
do
it,
it
on. Just, I've tried, I really have. I've tried with free and PC BSD. The only one I've had any luck with ever is Dragonfly BSD, which maybe that's what I should install on my on the external card slot of my EEE, actually. That might be what I do.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll put it on the laptop, but I'll put it on one of those spare desktops I got laying around just to have a look at it.
Yeah, Dragonfly is really fun. And I guess Monster B said that FreeBSD was pretty nice. So, yeah, I think it's worth trying out. The licensing thing is my biggest issue, I guess.
Yeah, I still have that same install.
Yeah?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Peter.
I was just going to ask part two. What he didn't like about the licensing?
Well, you know, it can be summed up with this. I don't think that many people realize just how important GPL is, and how if the GPL didn't exist, we wouldn't have, really, I don't believe we would have Linux as it is today at all. Because if it was left into the hands of the corporations and stuff, they wouldn't be contributing back code. They wouldn't give it back to us. And so if we just had the BSD license out there, we just wouldn't be using, you know, Unix like we do today. And that's just that.
Yeah, that's sort of like Deep Geek sort of mentioned in his thing that is why it's being used now on a lot of these devices now, because they like the licensing agreement where they can use the BSD kernel and then don't have to give anything back to the community, I take it. It's
yeah, exactly.
More or less what Apple did, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That is
that's
exactly
why they
what
took
did.
It.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they don't want to use GPL code because they know that means they have to give back to it, and they don't want to have to do that. And I don't know if that's a purely logistical thing. Maybe they just don't want to have to deal with a community, you know, contributing code and stuff. I don't know. Or maybe they don't want their social responsibility of giving code back, or maybe it's just pure and all-out greed. They just don't want to share the code. I really don't know. But I do know firsthand from reliable sources that they do not like the GPL. And, you know, and that's just how companies are. That's how businesses are. So if Linux was had to be done by BSD, it would be out there, but we wouldn't have the code. And we wouldn't have the base of developers improving it every day like we do. And so that's the one that I want to support. You know, that's the one that gave me Linux, basically. So that's the one I want to stay with, that license.
That's fair enough.
What were you going to say, 330?
He actually said everything I would have said, so I'm just going to second that and go on.
Wow, I spoke on licensing such that 330 didn't have anything to add. I am really getting better at this.
And don't worry, big boy, the check's in the mail.
Well, here's what surprises me. Now, like with TiVo, why didn't they go with BSD instead of Linux? Then they could have just closed their system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
good question, yeah.
Is it because Linux is easier to work with? There's more developers, it's more flexible? I mean, there has to be a reason.
I think there's better drivers and hardware support.
That's probably what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Because a TiVo is just a P3 box, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the specs are, but they are pretty low.
Yeah, I've never really had one, so.
I'd say you don't really need that much. It's a custom-built kernel running just the drivers it needs and everything. I mean, it held the original Xbox was a Pentium 3, and it was pretty cool.
Wow. It's a Pentium 3, really?
Yeah.
Well, that was a long time ago, though, the original Xbox.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
NASA still uses Pentium 1 computers, even
on
the International Space Station.
I'm not surprised at all.
Well, it's because
it depends what they're doing with them.
I know, exactly.
Well,
I mean,
no, it's the mission-critical stuff. They know the Pentium 1 architecture inside and out.
Yeah.
I mean, they know every single call. I mean, most of this stuff's written in assembly language.
Yeah, but see, that's the practical way of doing computing, and that's what Linux kind of... I mean, not that NASA's listening to Linux, but, I mean, the users of Linux do the same thing. We use computers until they absolutely get... I mean, they have to, like, melt before one of us will stop using a computer. But it's the consumer market that keeps saying, no, you got to get this new chip, you got to get this new motherboard and stuff like that. I mean, big deal. Most real computer users know that old computers are really quite useful still.
Yep. I just rebuilt my laptop that's a Celeron M 1.5 gigahertz and 768 megs of RAM.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was all because it was actually my mom had a laptop exactly like mine, and the half the chip melted.
Wow.
She sat it on blankets all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It just, all the thermal paste melted off, like just boiled off and just burnt the shit out of the chip. It's a win for me. And I can still use her old laptop as a battery charging station.
Nice.
All right, should we get into the topics?
We sure should.
I'm gonna kick it off with mine first because it's really short. How many of you guys are on Twitter?
As of a day or two ago,
nice.
Very little people, very few number. But yes, I am.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I am.
Never will be.
Well, I found a neat little program. It's called TIRCD. It's a little mini IRC daemon that you install on your computer, your workstation, or server, whatever. You fire it up, and then you can connect to it with any IRC client. And you can Twitter right from IRC. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I follow, like, I don't know, 300 people, and I have 300 followers. And it shows up just like a normal IRC channel. Just list all the people that's in the room, and you just chat to them just like normal. And you don't have that 140-character limit. So if you go over, say you type 200 words or 200 characters, and when you send it or hit enter, it automatically splits it up for you when it hits Twitter. So it's just multiple messages.
Did you figure out how to post to a single person doing that? Because I know you were trying it out on me, and you ended up just doing a standard Twitter and not an @Zoke.
No, I haven't. Actually, I used it for like an hour after I talked to you. And I haven't fired it back up, because I'm really not into Twitter. But I just thought it was neat to be able to connect to it like that.
Oh, no, I think it's definitely cool. There's a few little works that may need to be worked on. You know, the first one, make it run on for Identica.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That was my next question. So it doesn't post to Identica?
No, this one here is just for Twitter. The T stands for Twitter. It's T.
I thought, weren't there things that would, like, send your tweet out to both, like, Identica and Twitter?
Yeah, there's a lot of services like that.
Oh, okay, but those are two separate protocols, nevertheless.
Yeah, they're similar, but different.
Okay. And so did the Twitter server, like, get DDoSed or something? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, it did. It and Facebook.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, apparently it's to hit a single blogger. They were trying to wipe
really?
Off the face of the earth.
That's, like, overkill, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's the story I heard. It was all meant to be picking one guy. Picking
How
one
much
guy
spam do you get now? So, do you get all that spam on Twitter? Or birds following you?
Weird, yeah, I'm so horny, please look at my naked pics now with some random link, which probably is Trojan related.
If you follow those links, they go nowhere.
They just get a porn sites, don't they?
Probably.
I thought on Twitter you had to, you don't have to accept people to get
you can get an email part too.
Well, they can follow you, but you don't have to follow them.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you always get an email telling you that they've followed you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Sexy Susie is now following you.
And then that
Twitter?
Looks like a real person to you? You believe that someone named Sexy Susie is going to be following you on Twitter?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
To hear all your Linux tweets?
yeah, but because I thought it was Sleazy Susie's sister. I followed her. I won't get her safe. But, nah. But you get heaps of those emails.
Peter's saving up the roses.
Yeah, good on you. 420. I mean, that's a big 10-4, or 420, good buddy.
Well, that's all I have to say on that one. Klaatu, you want to go next?
Sure. Don't know if anyone's heard, but 4.3, KDE, was that the KDE 4.3 theme music or something?
I don't
KDE
know.
KDE 4.3 is out. It has been released as of, I don't know, a couple of days ago, 6th or 7th, I think, or the 8th, I don't know what day it is, even.
And it's awesome.
It is awesome.
It's just so pretty.
Well, one of the biggest new features is a bubble plasmoid that will monitor your system. It's called the bubble monitor.
And it rocks. But don't stop at just fun. You got to plaster them all over your desktop.
Yeah. No, it's got a couple of different improvements. I mean, a lot of people still to this day come up to me and say, well, they don't come up to me, but when I'm talking to them at meetings or whatever, love meetings or 2600 meetings, they'll say, like, you know, oh, 4 is no good. It doesn't have all the features of 3.5. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure that by the time that they kill 3.5 off for good, 4 is going to have everything because the changelog of KDE 4.3 just has a lot of the little things that 3.5 would have had, like some of the, what are they called, the tree view, you know, for like the system setting window and stuff like that, you know, to give it that kind of 3.5 feel where a lot of the things were in those little tree views. There's more IO slaves now so that you can view things like zeroconf in your file manager just like you can, you know, FTP or your applications folder or just, you know, whatever. There's the ability to have different desktop pictures on the background on each different desktop now, I think. Haven't tried that, but that's what they say. Yeah, just lots of little cool things.
Yeah, I must admit, I installed it on Arch. I've been playing around with it. And it is pretty impressive. I mean, I still don't think I'll be going back from Fluxbox just yet. But
see, those are two different beasts entirely, you know? Like, KDE is a desktop environment. Fluxbox doesn't even make that claim. They say they're a window manager.
Yeah, that's
the huge difference there.
And what KDE has to offer me, I don't personally need.
Exactly.
But that's the theme.
Interestingly enough, I don't think I actually need it either. But I don't know. I'm having fun playing around with KDE right now. It is nice and shiny, and it's an exciting thing to follow because it really is developing. You know, at such a it's just such an active project right now. I imagine once they hit some kind of stable peak, I'll probably kind of, like, stop needing to look at it all the time and go back to, like, Enlightenment or Fluxbox or something. But right now I'm just fascinated at seeing a project go from, you know, when I started with it, it was at 4, well, when I started with it, it was 3.5.9 or whatever. So you get to see 4, and then you get to see just how great it becomes, you know, 0.3 releases later. It's pretty cool.
And I must admit, I hadn't played with Compiz since Compiz and Beryl amalgamated or whatever they did.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, and it's a K-Win effects, I take it. That
K-Win, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, whatever it is. It really is just brilliant now.
It is, yeah.
Back in the day, you had that box. Now you get the sphere and the cylinder.
Yeah.
I could just sit there and play with that for half an hour.
Yeah, they're really nice.
I love all the transparency.
Yeah.
Now, you guys are running NVIDIA chips, right?
Yeah.
No, I can do it on my laptop, but I can't run the sphere or the cylinder. I can only run the cube on the Intel chipset.
What's your laptop running?
Yeah. 4,500.
Intel, right?
Yeah, Intel graphics.
I'm sorry. What distro?
That's on Arch.
Okay, because interestingly enough, I have two MacBooks, and my faster MacBook has Fedora 11 64-bit. My slower MacBook has Slackware 32-bit. I can do all the K-Win effects on my 32-bit slower MacBook running Slackware, whereas I can't do really any of them very well on the Fedora install. Nothing against Fedora, but that's just how it is. I mean, sorry.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I can't really account for it, to be honest. I have no idea what, other than one Slackware and one Fedora.
Yeah, well, I was trying to get a sphere going on the laptop, and then when I went and read into it, you can only run the sphere on a NVIDIA Addy chipset for some reason. You couldn't do it on an Intel. I can't remember why, but it's missing something.
Yeah, see, I just tried it again with my Fedora install, and it logged me out of X.
Oh, jeez.
It was just like, no, not going to do it. And yet on my Slackware box, it'll totally do it. It's got less RAM and a slower chip processor.
Yeah, and just everyone probably knows this, but I didn't. Because typically I run Fluxbox, and my laptop just boots into Fluxbox, and then when I want to play with the Windows Manager, I had to get out of X, and then I would load whatever Windows Manager. And then Jay Linger went and told me that when you want to play around with, I was playing around with that Anti-Code Deluxe that Jay Linger found, and I mucked around Orson there for a while. Simple thing to do, and I'm probably preaching to the choir, just go into open up a terminal, you know, Control-Alt-F2, simply type Start-X, then /user/bin, then when I want to play with KDE, it's simply Start KDE, --1, and that just opens up a whole new X session on TTY8, and then I can be in and out of KDE and back in the Fluxbox, you know, in seconds. And like I said, everyone probably knows that, but for blokes who didn't know that, like me, you had to keep booting out of your system when you wanted to have a look at a different Windows Manager. Too easy.
Okay, but here's my question.
Yeah.
What if you have a .x init RC file where you've defined what StartX invokes?
That's how I automatically boot into Fluxbox in that .x init trid. It automatically runs Fluxbox. And that's how I get into Fluxbox. Just by the time you start X, it boots into Fluxbox. So, no, that's fine, Klaatu. Yeah, just have to make sure you run start X, then path to your desktop you want to run, which is user bin, either start KDE or anti-code deluxe or even GNOME session, whatever you type, and just remember --1, and that starts it on a different X session. Too easy.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
Override it like that.
You can leave off the path to the window manager if you happen to have your XNRC specifying the right one.
Okay.
Even easier. Yeah. But, I mean, you can never, ever do something like that in Windows. You know, and
I've been
playing with Linux now for, 6 years, and admittedly, you know, it's only a hobby for me, but I just learn and learn and learn. And all these things are just fascinating to me, to be able to do something like that. And now I find myself running KDE a hell of a lot more because I have it there just when I want to go over and have a look. I get frustrated, I go over and I spin the cube, and it just relaxes me so much.
That's beautiful, Peter. Thank you for sharing that.
Right. Yeah. My wife loves it because I don't take it out on her anymore. She says, honey, spin the cube. Okay.
I can see future anger management lessons there. Okay, is everyone sitting in front of their computer? Get ready to spin the cube.
It works! It gets the bubbles happening, I'm telling you!
See, we can get away with all the prisons. All we need to do is make everyone spin the cube.
I tell you now, back when they did the GPO in Canberra, and this was going back a lot of years, the whole interior was painted pink, would you believe? And I understand they do that to prisons too, because that is a soothing colour. And they pay a lot of people a lot of money to go around and work all this sort of stuff out. So we may well see bubbles on the wall soon.
You know what else I like about KDE?
Nope.
I like pressing that little K button, and I can drag icons off of it.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I know, I like that. But you can do that on GNOME too, can't you?
I don't think you can.
Okay.
But you know what? This is cool. Okay, I put the trash can on the desktop, and you can enlarge it as big as you want. Because everything is SVG graphics.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like everything's perfect, no matter what the size is.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
I know
that
sounds stupid, but it's I like it. How you can just resize everything and everything looks good.
Yeah, I mean, that's two different things. That's number one, future-proofing your icons. You know, because, I mean, I remember when icons used to be like, I don't know, 48 by 48. And if you ever wanted it bigger than that, it was going to pixelate. But now it's, you know, forever. You can just make it as large as you need it to go. And then number two, it just shows the flexibility, you know. I mean, anytime you can give your user complete control over something, I mean, that's what Linux and free software is all about, just putting the user in control. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm glad they decided to do this good design from the start, because
mm-hmm.
now when they're working on the netbook part of KDE, you know, they don't have to do as much, because
right,
it just resizes
yeah.
the icon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. Anything else caught you on the KDE?
Oh, I forgot it was still my story. Yeah, that's it, really. Yeah, I mean, 4.3, I don't know, would you guys say, well, you guys have, I guess you weren't really running 4.2 all that much. I'd say it was fairly minor changes, but, you know, it's a nice little solid update of KDE.
Well, I'm running it on Debian Squeeze right now, and there's an update up a couple days ago, or actually yesterday, and they updated the KDM login manager, which is beautiful anyways, but it matches your desktop, so when you log in, it, like, fades out.
It looks like, that's so cool. That's really nice.
As that's fading out, your toolbar at the bottom's coming, you know, phasing in.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Sorry, Zeus has done that forever.
Yeah, but it was clunky when it did it.
Rubbish. It was
It was a 50-50 chance if you were going to actually be able to use your computer or not with Zeus.
You jest.
Was it written in Mono, Peter?
No, I don't know. I got no idea about that sort of stuff, I'm afraid. I tell you what I do know. Sexy Susie does exist because they just posted a comment on HBR, so there you go.
All right, J-Man, you want to go next?
Sure. First off, I got a link to a book written by a guy called Scott Chacon, I guess. And it's called Pro Git. And if Git is a mystery to you, you might want to check this out. It starts out with the basics, and you go through all the things that are, setting it up and pulling Git branches. And it's just a great resource. Especially if you intend on doing a little project, you know, similar to the one posted in the Linux Cranks forum, it would help to know about version control. Now, Peter was mentioning about running multiple X sessions, switching VTs, virtual terminals. I would guess that not a lot of people know about Zephyr. And Zephyr is... There used to be a tool called XNest that would allow you to run X clients inside of a window. Zephyr is like the next step up from that. XNest kind of fell by the wayside, and they don't have modern extensions like composite and damage, you know, render support that lets you that lets the system know what's going on in X. I got a screenshot here, so we know what I'm talking about.
Zephyr spelled Z-E-P-H-Y-R.
Right. when you launch this, it's going to be a capital X. I did a basic example, just very minimal options, but there's a ton of options that you can get when you run Zephyr --help. And I did a minimal one here. You can safely ignore the redirect. I was just trying to get rid of the output because it's going to throw a bunch of errors. But as you can see, I'm running XFCE in a window on top of the awesome window manager.
Wow, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
And, you know, you don't have to switch VTs. You can do testing of window managers, you know, programs that crash. They can take down Zephyr, but they won't take down the other X server. It is pretty cool.
So do you take a hit on performance when you do this?
Oh, yeah, of course. You always take a hit when you're running multiple window managers, especially if you fire up KDE in a window.
And put a heap of bubbles on there, trust me. It slows your system down to nothing. But it's worth it.
There's all kinds of options for you know, terminating it when the client dies or removing the control restrictions so you can forward X. There's lots of stuff like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just saying, this would all be available in the Arch repo, wouldn't it?
Right, yeah, it's the Xorg people do this, so it's pretty much in all the distros.
Oh, really? So this is a Zorg project?
Right, yeah.
Oh, that is pretty cool. Those people are prolific. I don't know how they do it. They do incredible work.
Somebody just fired up the bubbles.
That was me.
Fired the bubbles.
So where would you find the Zephyr website? I'm trying to search for it.
Zorgx.org.
Yeah, there's a free desktop project.
Yeah.
Here, I'll put the link in the IRC. All
right, cool. I'll put that in the show notes. Pretty easy to set up, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very easy. You just do the install, and then, you know, you can look over the options, but like I said, all I did in the screenshot, I did the screen resolution, and that was it. Export the display so it knows where to send whatever you're running. You know, you export the display just like you're doing SSH forwarding. And then whatever program you fire up is going to open up on that display.
That is incredible. I mean, this is, yet again, another really cool example of how Linux is just so flexible. I mean, think of trying to do something like that. You can't even, Mac users couldn't even imagine something like that. It's just too crazy. Well, they could, because they've got an X11 environment. So I guess Windows users couldn't.
So it's actually in the AUR repository for Arch. Found it on xorg-server-zephyr. I know what I'll be playing with later on this afternoon.
Yeah, it looks like it's in the Ubuntu one repos as well. And xserver-zephyr. So yes, I very may well be playing around with it later as well.
Yeah. You just never get a chance to get bored with this stuff.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you might settle into one thing, and then next thing you know, you're hearing about something totally cool and different that you can play around with. Zephyr is in Slack builds as well, so yep, I'll be trying that.
Anything else, Jalenzy?
No, that's all for me.
Two great picks, and I'm going to throw one more in here. It's a game called Blood Frontier.
All right. Blood Frontier.
It's a first-person shooter.
Oh, don't
care. It's using the Cube 2 engine, and it's a pretty sweet game. Just want to throw that one out there real quick. It's still on beta.
I just went to the website, which is presumably bloodfrontier.com. There's a YouTube video, and it says, Blood Frontier, it's bloody fun.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. It's only played the single player so far. Haven't tried the multiplayer yet.
Hey, you know what? That's what someone should organize for Ohio Linux Fest, like a LAN party where you could play, like, I don't know.
BZ Flag.
What's that?
BZ Flag.
What the heck
or
is
Urban
that?
Terror.
Yeah, Urban Terror or this thing, Blood Frontier, or something like that.
BZ Flag must be packaged with every single Linux distribution, Class 2. I can't believe you haven't heard of that.
Peter, you know I don't play games.
Yeah, I know, but it's the tank one.
Does it have Tetris in it?
I don't know.
That is all I play.
I don't know. But talking about games, I fired up that bloody Penumbra the other night at about 12:30 when I was waiting for Jude, and the house was all quiet and that, and the room was dark. And I was walking around, I turned around, and one of them bloody dogs jump up and and scared the bejesus out of me, fair dinkum. And honestly, I had to turn it off and go back out in the lounge. It's a good game. Anyone who didn't get it, go and get it. It really is brilliant. Don't let your kids watch your butt because they won't sleep. They'll be in your bed sleeping with you.
You know what really makes these games more enjoyable? Is wearing a headset when you play. It's just amazing all the sounds that you pick up. To me, I feel like I'm more into the game.
More immersive, definitely, yeah. And do it late at night, all the lights off, headphones on. It just makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. It was like I was like 12 again. I don't mind telling you, so I was scared.
Cool, and which game is that? That's that one that you got for $5 or whatever?
Yeah, Penumbra.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah, it really is. I haven't played a game in years, but it's just got, the gameplay is really good. I like
I did look at it, but the demo didn't run on my machine.
Yeah.
My graphics card is that crap. It can't run Penumbra. So.
Yeah, I imagine it probably needs a pretty good system to run.
What do you got for us, Silk?
I've got one that, well, bit of background first, brief bit.
Tell us your life story.
No, RSS feed readers. I'm quite picky on a lot of the RSS feed readers. I've tried literally every single feed reader that they have on Linux, and for various reasons I don't like a lot of them. Sometimes, you know, you read a story and they have a link to something else, and I want a feed reader that will, you don't need to load another program to look at that link. And there's a few little things. Anyway, so generally I like Google Reader. It's up there, you know, it's in my browser, so I don't need to kick open a browser to look at any links. But I know 330 is very, you know, anti-Google. And I installed Tiny RSS, which is at tt-rss.org, and it's very similar looking to Google Reader. Basically, it handles keyboard shortcuts, all manner of things. And
so, is this a separate GUI application, or this is something in the browser, or
I didn't explain that. No, it you install it on a server somewhere.
Okay.
You can run it locally.
Oh, I know. I get it. Go ahead. Yeah.
And then from there, and in fact, there are some implementations of this which are anyone can connect to. If you go to the actual website, they have, you know, but what if I don't have a server? And they're like, just go here and you can sign up. And I just posted the link into IRC. I said tt-/- or whatever you want to call it, rss.org. And it's dead easy to install. Just unpack it, create a database for it somewhere, load up the schema they've got so it populates the database with empty fields as required, and there you go. And it looks pretty cool, basically. I mean, I've been playing around with it today, and, you know, there's a bunch of different settings. There's a few things that are a little odd. I had an issue where I managed to lose the sidebar on it because that saved as a cookie, and I couldn't undo it, so I had to delete the cookies and log back in, and that fixed it. But it's, you know, it's a replacement for something like Google Reader, where, you know, it's out on the cloud, or however you want to put it, but you run it on your own little server. So
that's pretty cool.
I think it's cool. And if you're, you know, anyone's worried about Google Reader, you know, Google tracking everything you have, you can use that. But so, I mean, I've tried a bunch of other desktop-based RSS feed readers, and just I didn't like, because a lot of them, yeah, they would then spawn a Firefox if you clicked on any of the links in the stories. And that just bugs me. Why do I need to load something else up to look at it? So tiny RSS seems to be a cool thing. Oh, and of course it's all GPL'd. Code's all GPL'd.
Is it multi-user or just single user?
You can do both. There's an option in the config file for single user and multi-user. Multi-user requires you to log in. Single user doesn't. So they say if you're going to do single user on server, set up some other passwords or something on it.
Well, that's pretty cool. How would you compare it, like setting it up? Would it be like a WordPress or easier?
I mean, as I said, basically easier. There's less steps to go through, I think. You download the unzip the package. you know, on your server, you, as I said, you create the database, and then from that you go into, you know, PHP admin, my PHP, whichever one it is. What, I can't remember what it's called now, but that, something similar like that, to edit the SQL, the SQL database, and you just load the schema in, and then that bit's fixed. Then, as I said, you've unzip the file, you edit the config file to set up a few little things how you want, which is very little. You rename the config file, and then you just go in, log in. You can then, if you've got multi-user set up, you have to log in with the default, I think it's login of admin and password of password. If it's single user, it's just there instantly already for you, that you can set up. I mean, you can sort it by dates and show different amounts on the screen and do pretty much everything that Google does. You can even do, I think it's N for the next RSS story, P for the previous one, and then F, and then another letter for different feed commands. So I think it's FA to add a feed in, and a bunch of little stuff. So it's looking cool, basically.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. What is this? It says supports feed enclosures, and it says podcasts.
Which bit? Where?
It says in features overview on the website.
Yeah, it should say a podcast is just an RSS feed.
Unless it means it actually plays it or something, I'm not sure.
Because I know was it Liferia that comes in GNOME? You can play podcasts right from there.
That's pretty cool. I like it. I like the looks of it.
I mean, still, you know, they're still working on some things. They haven't got all of the showing the HTML correctly for some bits. And they actually say, you know, there's a few odd things that don't appear up like they should do. But
have you tried it with different browsers? See if it made a difference?
Not yet. No, I've just been using Firefox at the moment.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you guys want, I said I've got it set up on my server. I can give you some details on that and let you guys log in and see what you think.
Yeah, we can do that after the show.
And there's also a demo on the site.
Yeah, when I tried that, it wasn't working.
I just used it, and it worked out fine.
Oh, so yeah, they do have a demo on the website, but they say they've locked a lot of stuff down on it. I mean, they say they support Mozilla Suite, Firefox, Camino, and other Gecko derivatives, testing on Firefox 1.5 and 2, Safari, and probably other WebKit derivatives, Conqueror and other KHTML derivatives, and Internet Explorer 7 or Vista mostly works. Opera has some issues. So.
Well, that's a good find. Anything else in this one?
No, unless anyone else has anything to say.
No one.
Nobody.
And we're going to move on to Azimuth.
Yeah, everybody is moving along on the cutting edge here, and I keep moving further and further away from the cutting edge. Run across something I've seen before and used before, but it kind of come back and impressed upon me just how slick it was, and that's Rock Spiler.
Oh man!
In fact,
I love Rock.
The whole I've used it before in. What was it? Damn Small Linux had it. There's a link to the site I just put in the forum. But, it's amazing how fast it is. I've got a lot of old equipment around here. I've kind of found a sweet spot in the kernel that all my old equipment seems to be working at. It kind of caught up to all of it and hasn't surpassed it yet, and that's 2.6.26. And so I'm kind of rolled back into things like Lenny and into Fluxbox and the Rocks Filer, and I was going to try the whole Rocks desktop today, but I crashed Lenny install and then a CD drive that died in the middle of reinstalling. I didn't get there.
Now what?
But
what's the Rocks desktop then?
Well, that's what I'd seen before and didn't really know what it was until I got to playing with the Rocks on Anti-X. Anti-X has all the rock stuff available on it. Whether you turn it on or not, that's something else. But the Rocks desktop, well, it treats all your programs as files.
Okay.
And they're just all available in the Rocks filer. But the way Anti-X is using it when I'm running Fluxbox on it, it's still using the Rocks filer for a file manager. And but what got me looking at it was that thing works fast. I mean, and this is on old antique equipment, and that is fast. It pops up faster than any of the newer computers I've got with heavier weight distributions on them.
Yeah, you know what I use it for a lot is when I'm SSHing into my friends' OS 10 boxes, you know, to give them like support or whatever. I'll always install Rocks filer on there, because that way I can do SSH with exporting, and I'll get Rocks filers up on my screen so fast, it's almost like I'm not even SSHing. It's just really fast. It's nice.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast it is. They don't have any BS in it. It's just all muscle. But I didn't get to explore it as far as I wanted to go today, but there's always tomorrow.
So yeah, how long's this really been neat. Around?
And that's all I've got.
It does.
It's been around forever.
I must spend all my life on the rock.
Well, yeah, I think we've told you that before, Peter.
Yeah, probably have.
I didn't know that they had a whole desktop environment. I mean, I've used Rocks filer ever since I discovered what Unix was. It was like one of the first things that I could get to compile from source. But I didn't realize they had a whole environment going for them. I like it. It looks neat. And try it.
Did you see that screenshot that's
now,
on the right?
Which one, sorry?
It looks like a triple E.
I know, yeah, right? That's pretty cool.
The name Rocks comes from Risk OS on X.
Oh, okay.
And that's where it was inspired by the Risk OS.
Oh, maybe that's why I could... Wait, what is Risk OS?
I'll tell you. Risk OS is a computer operating system which was originally developed by Acorn Computer Limited in Cambridge in England. There you go, Zach. And it was originally for the ARM-based processors. It was released in 1988.
Cool. I'm loving this. I really like this. This is really cool.
Yeah, so do I.
I'm gonna try this tonight for sure.
I'm gonna try to run it under Zephyr. Can I do that, Jay Lindsay? That's what I can do that, can't I?
Yep.
Too cool. How good's this?
And
heck, you
like
probably won't notice much performance hit either.
Yeah, not on Rocks. I'm telling you, that thing is just fast. It's the fastest thing I've
It rocks.
Yeah, it really does. It rocks.
And it's got bubbles on the desktop as icons. You just can't improve.
Oh, crap.
Darn. I'm not going to try anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore.
But the bubbles are part of your beloved KDE.
Oh, yeah.
You should be loving the bubbles.
I love the bubbles. Oh, I forgot. I love the bubbles.
Well, we better end the show. We got too much to do.
Yeah, really. I know. Wait, 3:30 hasn't gone yet.
Yeah, we're saving him for last. He's
okay.
He's putting on his costume right now, getting ready. You ready, 3:30?
Yeah, I guess so. This is going to be the less technical aspect of the show. Instead of doing technical things, I sat down and read, which is odd for me. I usually don't have the attention span for it, but I've read Cory Doctorow's Little Brother now, and wanted to do a little talking about it and some of the interesting stuff he did around the book. The idea of the book is some kids live in San Francisco are picked up by the Department of Homeland Security after a terrorist attack where the Golden Gate Bridge is blown up. And they're treated, you know, the way that Guantanamo detainees were in the real War on Terror. And
War on Terror.
And they make, you know, they make jokes about that term itself too. But it's really cool because it chronicles the, you know, just some, you know, normal hacker kids, you know, they're not really doing anything wrong, but they're messing with the stuff that exists. There's, you know, like one of the things is their school employs a thing that keeps track of people's gait, you know, how they walk. So a bunch of the kids start putting rocks in their shoes so that they walk different. So then when they're ditching school, you can't tell who walked out the door because it didn't match anything. But one of the interesting things is all of the technology in here is either already being used or is totally plausible. And people, before I looked it up, I would have said are working on it, but have worked on it. There's a Linux distribution in it called Paranoid Linux, which the kids all load onto their school laptops because the school has spyware and all kinds of stuff on the computer, so you can't actually use it for anything useful. But that seems to have closed up shop because there was actually somebody working on one. And if you go to Instructables.com, there's a member that is actually a character from the book. His name's Winston. It's W1N5P0N.
How original.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be like a 12, I think it was 15-year-old hacker kid, yeah. But, he tells you, you know, quote unquote, he tells you how to, like, use Tor and lie to authority figures and how to find pinhole cameras and how to block or kill RFID chips.
Cool.
I'll stick that in the IRC real quick. But, yeah, it's actually a really, really good book. And anyone that liked 1984 would like this because this is literally what somebody would do if 1984 actually happened. And I think that anyone that comes across a kid, you know, in their life that's between the ages of 10 and 25 should give them a copy of this book. And you can get it free online. It's Creative Commons license.
Why is Winston using Gmail if he's so paranoid? There's an article on this, Instructables, how to encrypt your Gmail email.
I think it's one of those things kind of where people had been using it, and, you know, everybody already knows your, you know, all your friends already know your Gmail address, so you might as well secure what you have.
Yeah.
You want to hide something, put it in plain sight.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things they do in the book is take, the idea is that the next Microsoft Xbox will be given away for free because they make all their money off of licensing the SDK. So all these kids have these, you know, just these free little, you know, microcomputers sitting around, and they all hook them up to their own little, like, hacked together internet that's all, like, super encrypted and awesome and stuff. It's really cool. I think if anyone's remotely interested, should give it a read. And if you don't want to actually read it, the publishing company actually allowed him to do the audiobook under a Creative Commons license, so you can download that for $20.
That's pretty cool.
You can find the all the stuff about the book at craphound.com/littlebrother.
Does this guy ever go to, like, Linux festivals and talk, or have you, I mean, or is he just a writer?
Oh, no, Corey used to work for the EFF.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's done a lot of kind of crap they talk about in this book. He ran Open Cola, you know, the company that gave out they gave it out to try and get people to understand what open source was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he ran that company during the .com boom and bust.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I've heard him on some of Leo's shows. He guests on there sometimes.
Oh, okay. I'm not interested in him anymore.
Well, the reason he ends up on Leo's shows is because he is also a blogger for Boing Boing.
No excuse.
No excuse, that's right.
So are we cutting Jono off also?
Yeah, well, I cut him off a long ago.
Yeah, he's not welcomed here. Oh, I forgot we were on Tit Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's welcome.
He's welcome here.
Linux cranks, I don't know.
Yeah.
This really is a good book, and this is probably the last book in a decade that I actually finished. Because I usually read just enough to be able to pass whatever thing has to do with class. So,
how many pages?
I'm not sure because I read the text file. I think I opened it up in Abbey Word, and it said it was 250 or so.
That's a big book.
Yeah, and it's written for young adults. So it's not, you know.
So it's in, like, really, really big fonts with really simple words?
No, it's written for, you know, for like a 12 to 15-year-old kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's a romantic subplot in it, you know, and stuff like that, but...
What grade are these kids supposed to be in?
What
does the novel say?
The kids, I think, are in high school. So there may be freshmen.
Okay. 155 printed pages, that's what I predict. So that would be a quick read then. It didn't take you, it sounds like you finished it pretty much in a day, is that correct?
Oh, well, I took a while, but I was reading it on the N800, so I had interface issues to deal with.
And battery issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And you've got a lot on your plate at the moment, 2330.
Trying to get back into school, yeah. And having to deal with these wankers.
What? What's Peter 15 chuckling about? Peter 15. Peter 64. People are saying I'm 15 years old in the chat room.
Peter's giving me shit.
330 must have said 15 times today in the chat that he had so much on his plate he's too busy.
Oh, yeah, about the task manager thing and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to know what an unemployed bloke does that he's so busy.
Cool. That really is a lot of work. I'm dealing with the same thing, to be honest.
The same thing you do while you're sitting on your mower.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But I am busy doing it. So one of the other things that Corey had done around this book was for people that downloaded it and then later decided, wow, they would have really loved to pay for it, you could actually go and pay for a book, and they had librarians from high schools and middle schools and stuff that were requesting copies. So you would buy a copy, and then they would link your copy up with somebody that had requested one for a school. They would ship it to that school. So this book is actually showing up in classrooms and in school libraries.
That's cool. Very good. It just amazes me still that we're in, like, 2009 or whatever we're in, and it's like people, the educational institutions still aren't seeming to understand the importance of computer literacy, you know, and technology and stuff like that. It's just like, I keep expecting kids that I come across, you know, like 8-year-olds and stuff, to like know everything about computers already. And to my amazement, most of them that I've come across, I mean, which isn't many, but I mean, you know, friends with kids and stuff, I mean, they know nothing. It's like, I don't know what they're being taught about computers. It's just really shocking to me.
Yeah, I'll say, this one will teach them a little bit about computers, a lot about questioning authority, and...
Perfect, that's what
a little
need
bit
to
about
do.
Creating chaos.
Perfect, that's what kids need in the year at school.
And there are even some of these projects that they put up on Instructables that I plan on doing, like building an RFID blocker and, you know. So this is really cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything else?
No, not unless somebody has some questions.
Anybody got
think everyone's itching to play with Roxy.
I know, really. Rocks. I'm looking at rocks myself.
Yeah.
Sorry this wasn't technical. The only technical thing I did this week was rebuild a dead laptop.
Yeah, we know you've been busy. We know.
I was busy saving myself over $500 by rebuilding my damn laptop.
That was the one that's packed it in bloody near 12 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
screen
died.
I remember that.
My mom left her laptop sitting on a blanket and melted half of the processor. Like half of the actual part that gets hot, not the silicon around it. But yeah, it like was melting off. So I stole I actually replaced the keyboard because mine was dirty. So Peter, you'll be happy to know that. And swapped out the whole lid and bunch of the internals that had gone bad.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah. Sam, here's a tip for people if you're going to take apart a laptop. Check on the internet and see if the company has put up a how-to guide. Because once you get about 75 screws in and you go, well, oh, why man. The hell doesn't this come open? They tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
Like IKEA style. It's wild.
Yeah, no, there used to be a site. There's a couple of sites probably, but there's one that I used to go to all the time that had, yeah, like taking apart procedures of all kinds of computers. It was nice.
You can often find the technical manual, not just the user manual, but you often do a search and you'll find the technical manual that the technicians do use when they pull stuff apart.
Yeah, that's what
it
I
can
found.
Come in pretty handy.
And my Peter 64 fan club sticker is still on there, so that's all that matters to me.
Oh, that was awful. Those are the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
I wore my Peter 64 fan club t-shirt to the, I had it on and happened to go to the hospital because my grandma was there, and I got dirty looks.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything else?
I've got a quick one, Monster B. I always said that I had to boot in, or now I don't have to boot into Windows anymore to do my video editing because I use KDN Live, and I'm very happy with the way it performs. But I was actually lying because I had forgotten there was one thing I still have to use Windows for. And the other day, I went to program my Harmony remote, which you don't do very often, but I remembered I can't do this. I tried to run the Harmony software in Wine ages ago, and it wouldn't work, and I tried to reinstall it again, it still didn't work. And luckily, my wife's laptop still has Vista on it, so I booted in there, and as I was programming it, I was talking to Scan in the IRC channel, and he pointed me to a little program called Concordance, which is a bloke by the name of Phil has written a little program where you can program your Harmony remote under Linux. So, now to be totally honest with you too, I wasn't able to get this to compile yet. I only have it a quick play around with it the other night. I haven't sat down and gone right into it and find out what the error message I'm getting means. But if anyone does have a Harmony remote and, like me, has to boot into Windows to program it, have a look at this concordance. Monster B will put it in the show notes. And now, if I get this working, I will never have to boot to Windows ever again.
That's what you said when you were talking about editing video.
Yeah, I forgot all about it, Klaatu, because it's once you program a remote, it's very rare you have to touch it unless you get a new appliance or what have you.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I just happened to change something in my entertainment system, and I thought, oh, I've got to add this. And then I thought, oh, God, I've got to go into bloody Windows to do it.
Wow.
So anyway, there you go. Thanks, Scan, for that. And it's good to know.
And so these are one of those universal remotes that it's got unlimited amounts of things it'll talk to, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like this one does, I think, 15 different devices. It's the one I use to do the X10 that I talked about in last fortnight's episode or whenever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean they are, and they replace everything. Instead of having like five remotes sitting on the table, you just have the one.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah, they've got, you can get the really expensive ones that have got touchscreen and everything, but they run into $600 or $700 over here. Yeah, I'm not that rich, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's like $10 over here, so I could probably fit one.
Yeah, well, you could probably buy two. But Harmony is now owned by Logitech.
Oh, really?
So everyone would
Logitech doesn't seem that bad for, like, drivers and things like that. I mean, I don't know if they put forth a huge effort to give stuff over to Linux, but I don't know. If you get a Logitech product, well, no, that's not true, because the webcams, I don't know about the webcams, but I don't know. Some of the Logitech stuff seems to be pretty compatible with anything I plug it into, generally
speaking. Yeah, well, the Logitech bought Harmony quite a few years ago now.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if the software works on a Mac, actually. I never bothered to look. But anyway, the fact is, it doesn't work under Linux, but
this concordance does. And if you go to the page, you can go and check whether most of the Harmony remotes are supported, but a few aren't. But there's a thing, a list there you can just check to make sure. All the 550s and all that sort of stuff are. But there's a list anyway you can go and check.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. That was a good find.
Yeah, I hope you get it working.
Yeah, well, I haven't had a great play with it. Obviously, plenty of people have when I was reading the site, so can't be too much.
What kind of error are you getting?
Oh, I can't remember quite too, because I was building it on the laptop.
Oh, okay.
It, yeah. Just when I went to make it, it came up. I can't remember. I'll have to look. And I actually meant to post it. And Jay Lindsay was offline at the time, so I didn't bother.
Sweet. Well, you guys want to talk about the My Personal Coding Challenge in the forum?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I posted this last night. It's, like I said, it's called My Personal Coding Challenge 2009. This is a challenge to test yourself to develop an application, plugin, or script, and really just sign up on the forums. It's LinuxCranks.com/forum, and you just commit to a project, like something you're going to do. It could be anything. And the deadline is that, you know, all the applications or whatever you're going to make has to be done by November 21st. That way we have a week to, like, look at them, and then we'll talk about them on November 28th on TIT Radio.
So how many months is that? That's like 1, 2, September, October, November. That's about 4 months, right?
Yeah, it's like 15 weeks.
Not bad. And what kind of programs are you talking about? Like anything or
anything.
Any size and scope.
It's really just a personal challenge for yourself.
To get yourself, like, coding, basically.
Yeah. Or even if you're a coder, you just want some competition. You know, to me, I need a goal to do something, and I think this would be a way to teach myself how to code.
Yeah, it's a little bit like write a novel month or something, you know. It's just like this arbitrary period of time that says do this and see if you can do it.
What would you say must be if you met someone who, you know, always saying how much into technology they are and that, and then just said they didn't have the time to participate in something like this? What would you say to them if that happened?
What would I say to them? I would say, okay, I put the rules. I'm just going to change the subject, Peter. Okay, the rules are, okay, it has to run on Linux, BSD or OpenSolaris. Doesn't have to be all three, just one or the other. The code has to be open. No hello worlds, because that's pretty lame. No mono, and no forks.
How can you tell people not to code in mono? I mean, you might not agree with it, but
it's my challenge that I say no mono.
That's ridiculous, though, because if it's their personal challenge, then they might want to do it in mono.
Not on my forum.
All right.
House rules. I added some FAQs on there, too.
Yeah, who's this bloke who reckons he can code better than whoever? No one can code better than whoever. Oh, not that whoever.
Yeah, it says, is this challenge really fair? I can code circles around whoever.
But wait, it's not even a challenge among... I mean, it's a challenge to oneself, correct? I mean,
right.
He has to code circles around himself.
Yeah, you're not competing against others. It's just a personal challenge.
Yeah. And so what are we going to do? Like, at the end of it, we're going to, like, look at all the things that people did and, like, make fun of them? Or what? Like, I mean...
Well, if you want to. Some people we're going to make fun of, but... No, we're going to take a look and see what people... what they did, and... I don't know, maybe we can learn something from it.
Yeah. And either, I mean, probably no matter what, we're all bound to benefit a little bit from what comes out of this, because you never know. I mean, there have been random scripts posted on the Cranks forum already, you know, that are really handy, like, you know, aug converters or scripts and porn get scripts and stuff like that. I'm sure people use those every day.
And I like what you said here about what are the prizes. The answer to that one is knowledge. And that's right.
Knowledge.
Best prize there is.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't believe that.
That almost made me cry when I read that.
Somebody wanted a prize.
That's so sad that someone needs a prize for this. Knowledge should be totally enough.
I wonder if somebody's going to do a comic book reader.
Oh, wow.
That'd be really cool. Open source comic book reader. So who here is going to try this?
Yeah, I'm going to try this.
Well, if you, Blake, are in, I'm going to be in, but I've never, ever looked at coding. Well, actually, I coded one. I did something once back in BASIC a lot of years ago, but that wouldn't count. I'm going to give it a go, even if I don't. You can all have a good laugh.
No, I might. I'm not sure. I'm thinking about it yet. Trying to think of a good project.
Oh, yeah.
I just reinvent the wheel.
That's difficult. Something good to do, you know?
Yeah. I think you said that, Jay Lindsay, didn't you, in the forum yesterday? One of the hardest bits about this whole thing is getting the idea. You need that idea to get started.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I was thinking about it because I read the forum post last night. I was thinking about it today, and it's true. I mean, everything you can think of that you need to get done, you've got, like, what, 4 or 5 different options in open source? You know, I mean, at least on the level that I'm going to be able to program right now, you know? But that's why I'm thinking of just doing, like, a shell script or something of like, a process of things that I'm going to need to be
No,
doing
what we need is a program with, like, bubbles, and then you, like, they bounce around, and you can throw things at them, and...
Oh, wait.
Actually, Zach, you could be onto something. And in those bubbles, we could have a to-do list. Because we need a bloody nuller to-do list on Linux.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like little post-it notes to bubble themselves and then bounce like that red ball. This is brilliant.
I checked out Gambus today. I don't know if you guys ever looked into that.
No, what is that?
It's I don't even have the website pulled up.
Well, what's it called again?
It's called Gambus. Maybe I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah,
G-A-M-B-I-S. Yeah.
Kind of like BASIC.
It's a closed source.
Hi, guys.
Supercow
Power.
Here, I'll post the link in the IRC.
Okay.
It's a development environment based on BASIC, on a BASIC-type language. But it's... You, like, pick your GUI, like, whatever. You can, like, want it to be, like, a Qt or GTK. I mean, it's really nice. I mean, it looks really nice. I mean, you just drag and drop buttons over, double-click on them, and then you can put your code in. But I cannot find any good documentation on it.
Yeah.
I did find a wiki, and just to make a hello world, I followed the instructions to a T.
Mm-hmm.
Started it up, and the screen was blank.
So you're not a very good programmer.
Well, I followed
it. Sounds like when I tried to teach myself Lisp.
Yeah, really.
Follow the directions to a T, and it wouldn't compile.
Yeah. Yeah, this is all sounding depressingly familiar.
After 3 weeks of that, I said, maybe I don't need to learn Lisp.
Maybe I need to go back to school, that's what I said. So that's what I'm working on.
Weren't you messing around with Ruby?
I have a book on it, and I didn't really intend to get the book on Ruby. It just happened to be about Ruby. It's kind of neat, actually. I hear different things about it, different goods and bads. I don't really know anything. I just know that it's kind of cool, actually. I've been playing around with it. I haven't been doing anything like Ruby on Rails or anything, because I don't do that whole web development thing, but... Just it's a lot like Python, or it feels a lot like Python to me. Has anyone compiled a 2.6.30 kernel lately and actually had it boot?
Yeah, I'm using it now.
Okay.
And it's fast.
Okay, cool.
I get like 12-second boot times.
Nice, okay. I got the source, and then I was talking to someone last night, and they were saying they were having trouble with it for some reason. But... I am going to...
Trouble with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think they were blaming the kernel itself. He said that he was running it fine with 2.6.29, and then he used the same config file for 2.6.30 and just wouldn't boot past a certain point or something weird like
that. I want
that.
Names, Claw 2.
Names?
Yeah, because he's going to get kicked.
Kicked? No,
maybe even banned.
No, it was in real life at the 2600 meeting. It wasn't a person on IRC. Amazing, huh?
You went out into the world?
Yeah.
Are you okay? You don't have anything, do you?
No.
You can get the swine flu or the HIV or anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting checked soon for all that stuff. Just in case.
Do you wear a dust mask when you go outside?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
To keep my nose from falling off.
Oh, jeez. Well, you guys got anything else before I wrap this up?
Nope.
All right.
Sorry, I was looking at Gambus.
I am
too.
Yeah,
I was looking at all the nice screenshots.
Well, it's very nice, but there's very little documentation on it. And I think I need a lot of documentation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had a few ideas. I was like, maybe Python. Then I'm like, well, maybe just PHP, do something that works inside of a web browser.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, Python, I mean, I've had great experience with Python. I don't know. It's the logic flow that I think I don't quite have yet. So, got to work on that. But, I mean, Python, I mean, there seems to be interfaces for that all over the place. You know, you got Python in Java, you got PyCute, you got PyGTK. I mean, just if anything you can imagine, you can use Python. Even Xcode understands Python, and I mean, that doesn't understand anything, so.
And that PyCute, is that like a development environment too, or?
You can use it in KDevelop or Qt Creator, I'm pretty sure. I haven't looked at Qt Creator in a little while, but I'm pretty sure you can use PyCute in that. But certainly KDevelop.
Yeah. Well, it's really neat using those designers, because you can, like, design a cool interface, but then when it comes to, like, making things work, because I could make one hell of a design.
I think someone said that they actually knowingly did it that way. I mean, I guess all the programmers say don't do that. You know, they say program the program first and then get the GUI around it. But I was talking to someone, I want to say it was Paul Frields, and I don't want to put words into his mouth in case I'm wrong, but I think it was him talking about Pulsecaster, where he said he actually just did the visual interface first and then just assigned the functions to all the little buttons and drop-down menus and stuff like that, and it worked out really well for him, so, or whoever I was talking to.
I can see it. It could be possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, I don't know, when I do something like that, it makes you, it feels like you're actually doing something, you know?
Oh, sure, like when you design it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Well, I don't know, I mean, maybe doing it that way first will give you, or me, a little bit better of an idea of how it all has to fit together. Seeing it that way, you kind of get the logic of the application, or at least it would seem that way to me.
Well, there you go. You could just design an interface.
Yeah.
For your 15 weeks.
There you go.
And that could be your, you could say, well, that's
no,
all
that's
I wanted
cheating.
To do.
That's cheating. That doesn't do anything.
Well, you could fail and still have some code to show.
That's true.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up. And next week will be another Tit Radio. So I'll see you guys next week.
Ta-da.
See you, everyone.
Catch you guys later.
Good night, John Boy.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.